speaking today with Darren Triff, who is the co-founder and CEO of Changes. Darren, it's great to have you with us today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Could you explain what Changes is?
Sure. Changes, as the name would imply, is about change agents. And we describe ourselves as an internet platform that connects exciting people who are changing the world with people who can help them. And so essentially what we've done is we've built a platform that provides change agents wherever they are in the world, digital storytelling tools and services that enable them to really share their experiences from the front lines in first-person narratives and get people excited about what they're doing and then enable those people to begin to mobilize around them and support them based on the skills and interests of what we call backers, which is on our platform similar to followers on Twitter.
Right, so their backers are people who are engaged in their story and supporting them in various ways from their attention to actual help and volunteering or to financial donations.
Exactly.
Okay, and what was the need that you and your co-founder found change in June of 2008? What need were you trying to fill that you didn't see was out there already? I mean, we had some social media communication platforms already, from Facebook to certain others that were more focused around volunteers and philanthropy.
Yeah. Well, both Alex and I come from an entertainment background. And so, at the core, we believe that powerful stories and storytelling is the most effective way to hook people, around issues and get excited about having a social impact. And, in 2008 and even when we were conceiving the idea in 2007, there were a lot of platforms that were built around cause and issues and nonprofits, but there was no platform that enabled, this term that we use, change agents, which includes social entrepreneurs, but there's also musicians, athletes, photographers, activists, engineers, technologists of all kinds that are doing really cool things sort of on their own outside the system. There was no platform that enabled them to tell their stories episodically. And it's not about, we're not about a snapshot in time or a profile about a cool person. We are about enabling them to really, share their adventures in an ongoing manner so that people really feel like they are they're participating in the exciting work of a change agent and have that sort of access to a personality that that really inspires them, that is probably doing things that they might feel are a bit outside their realm of capability or, perhaps impractical for their lifestyle, but they make a personal connection with someone that that is really exciting. And so that connection enables them to feel an impact, which is very different than, writing a check to a large, potentially bureaucratic organization or any other kind of forms of traditional philanthropy.
So was there one moment that, you come from an entertainment background, you had done work with PBS and Scholastic Entertainment, both in business development and kind of digital strategy. What got you in the more socially focused issues? And I realize it's not only social entrepreneurs who are change agents, but what kind of turned your attention to enabling people to tell these types of stories and mobilize support for
them? Well, I mean, there actually was a single moment where the light bulb went off. I was, when I was working at Scholastic on my last day of work, I was across the street having lunch with friends, and there was this guy that was walking around the restaurant with a Mac showing pictures of his experiences on a surgery ship. They also call them mercy ships, and these are ships that are outfitted with modern medical equipment. Typically, they port outside of Africa, West Africa, and they treat patients. And this guy was Scott Harrison of Charity Water, ultimately became Charity Water. This was before he even started Charity Water. And he just, you know, the way Scott was telling his story just blew me away. And whether I sort of understood the medical situation of the patients that were being treated in Africa or not, you know, really didn't matter, because this was this guy who took incredible risks, had an incredibly exciting story, and was making a commitment, and there, you know, there he was in front of me showing a slideshow. And ultimately he set up his MySpace page. This was in the days where MySpace was the only social network or the only one that had any credibility. I started following Scott, started getting sort of his dispatches from the field, and thought, you know, if we created a platform for, there's all kinds of people everywhere that are doing really amazing things. If we create a storytelling platform for them and enable them through their stories to mobilize followings, and we created the right tool sets and an easy to use kind of turnkey framework, this could be really powerful. And it was Scott that, he's sort of the archetype change agent. It was him that led us to creating Changements.
That's interesting. So you had this incredibly engaged and compassionate person in front of you who was literally walking around the restaurant with his computer trying to share his story and reach people, which is not only allows for limited scale, but doesn't have what you interestingly said was that kind of episodic storytelling. So from that point, Darren, how did you decide to start a business, and how did you and Alex connect and become co-founders of Changents?
Well, he and I, you know, we led digital ventures for PBS, for the network, and it was a really interesting time to be there, because we were, you know, trying to strike this balance between the largest nonprofit media company in the country and the mission of a nonprofit media company with sustainable business models. And so he and I met at PBS, and we used to joke that PBS could reach their audience when they were 0 to 6 years old, and then they would pick up their audience when they were 66 years old. And so we wanted to develop, you know, a very cool, attitude-driven, story-driven, entertainment-driven destination that had, the mission of getting people excited about people, other people working outside the system, which is really important. It's not about connecting to institutions or nonprofits. It's really about connecting to these extraordinary personalities who are really moving the needle in very efficient, exciting ways with out-of-the-box ideas and all this kind of stuff. So when I think we were sort of frustrated that PBS didn't reach the right audience, and that we didn't believe in sort of the nonprofit media model. We are for-profit social entrepreneurs, which at the time was a very new idea, and so when I met Scott, and this idea of packaging up the sort of the entertainment value of his ongoing story and his personality as a storyteller with a social impact, targeting a millennial audience, using all these new tools on the internet, that seemed to be the winning combination. And obviously this was at a time where companies were beginning to understand the strategic business implications of doing good, and we were really lucky to partner with Timberland in our first full year of operations to launch a sort of a first of its kind, what we would call a change agent program, and that's what really got us rolling.
I want to get back into go to the Timberland in more depth, but when you were putting it together, did you realize, so this was 2007, I can imagine, did you realize what a large role social media would play? And as you mentioned, MySpace is the only credible social media network, social network.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so funny you mentioned that, because we are, we wrote our business plan in 2007, right? And then we parked it. And we're about to completely rewrite it. In fact, we're completing a new rewrite this week, and we hadn't touched it between 2007 and today, right, February 2010. And while the core what we were trying to do, you know, was still there. We the model and the way that we're achieving our goals is completely different. So it literally was a full rewrite, right?
Can you highlight some of those points for us? I think that's really important, that ability to have your vision and your mission, but have the tactics for it and the environment for it change. And so I'd be interested in what were some of the changes, and were they easy, were they hard to see or hard to adapt to?
Oh, man, there's so many. You know, when we initially conceived of the plan, it was really a video-based site, right? I mean, this was when YouTube was really taking off, before Google bought YouTube, and video was sort of the first foray into social media. And so we had this vision of creating a video site, you know, cool videos about change agents around the world, right? And we came from this entertainment background. And where it's really evolved is, given all the different media formats, right, whether it's, you know, whether it's Twitter and all the text messaging technologies, to blogs, to vlogs, to photo galleries and other kinds of things, we completely changed, we expanded dramatically all the different kinds of storytelling or kinds of technologies that can be used to tell stories, including, we have a phone-in podcast technology where no matter where you are, every change agent has their own access code. They can phone in and leave audio, you know, podcasts to their backers, right? So I think the storytelling tools evolved dramatically, and we are now in the process of developing the product requirements for a new release of the site, which we hope to which will be a dramatically different site, which we hope to launch Q2. And a lot of the changes involve the ways that we use crowdsourcing to identify members of the community that have particular talents and skills and interests that match up to a change agent's need, and enabling that sort of discovery and recommendation engine to go to work and really pair these exciting personalities that are out in the field with people at home who want to connect with them and want to help them based on what they do best.
Now, that's fascinating. So, and I see, you know, there's a trend as technologies become more sophisticated in the way that we can collect and sort data. There are more companies who are making their matches. I mean, not along these lines, but you had mentioned this as something that will be a future iteration.
That's right. I mean, we're... You know, the site's pretty simple right now, and you know, as successful as we've been, and you know, we've also had a lot of challenges, and our change agents have told us the challenges with the platform, and our users have told us the challenges. So we've taken all that in, and we're, you know, as I said, we're working with a company in Portland, Oregon right now to release a new version of the site Q2
of 2010.
Up to 10.
Okay, great. So, Darren, I want to touch back on something you said when you and Alex were thinking about this and conceiving it, and actually prior to that, probably when you're working at PBS, you had this idea of a for-profit social entertainment site. What made you want to go with the for-profit model? And it seems that you feel strongly about that versus the nonprofit model.
Yeah. Well, I'm really passionate about the idea of for-profit social enterprise, and I think the reason is that I guess I inherently believe that by maximizing profits and by maximizing revenue and by following the discipline of the business world, that you can maximize social impact. And the healthier a company is, the more that it can give back, right? And I believe that those are actually mutually reinforcing. Now, does the rest of the world believe that? I think it's really challenging. I think being a social entrepreneur, a for-profit social entrepreneur, and trying to raise capital in that kind of context is very difficult, because I think that traditional investors believe that doing social or environmental good creates a discount on the ROI, and I just don't believe that. So personally, I have a real mission to prove that for-profit social enterprise, is really the new way the new way for sort of our, I'm not saying this very eloquently, but for our, what I would call a stakeholder society, not a shareholder society.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was going to say the last thing is I think there's been a real values reset in America, right? I mean, there's probably 95 million Gen Xers and Ys, right? And I think that they feel a real sense of a need to give back, and I think they feel a real sense that companies have a responsibility not only to give back but to help them figure out ways to give back. And so I think that the timing couldn't be better to be a social entrepreneur in the context of helping companies develop really interesting programs. I think it's much more challenging on the investment side.
And you mentioned that you see when you're talking about for-profit social enterprises with potential investors, they see it as a discount on the return of investment. And I've heard this from other social entrepreneurs. We really can't go to investors. We have to get more creative with our funding sources, or they're not available to us because of that reason and because of that mindset. So how did you and Alex go about raising money for?
Well, the truth is we decided not to. We decided just to build a product. We bootstrapped it, and we decided to just prove ourselves. And that's why, the relationship with Timberland was so important last year, because it generated revenue. It turned us to profitability, and it enabled us to scale and really on our own, kind of on our own gas. But I got to say, I am looking at alternative. The world's changed a little bit since last year, and now there's alternatives like the L3C. But even that, and in fact, I was up in Vermont last week. The Vermont Law School hosted a symposium on this new corporate structure, right? That's kind of a hybrid between the LLC and a 501c3. It's called the L3C. But even that really irritated me, because the name L3C stands for Low Profit Limited Liability Company. Right, so it runs against sort of the idea. Again, it's this idea of a discount, right?
Right. Yeah.
So the mechanisms are not the mechanisms just are not in place yet, and so we just decided to just simply not pursue capital right now, and just build the business.
And that's what I hear from a lot of social entrepreneurs. And have you been following what B Corporation is trying to do around some of the tax incentives and the structural policy for social enterprises?
I have, and I think that for a big company, I'm not sure I understand the tax implications, but I understand the idea behind a B Corp. And I'm not sure, I think for a large company where you've got a lot of shareholders, that you need that kind of legal infrastructure to allow you to make decisions that might not necessarily maximize shareholder profit, or we'll put it a different way, social and environmental considerations need to be taken into account when making business decisions. But I'm not sure for a smaller company, B Corp makes a lot of sense, but I might not fully understand it.
So I want to get then back to what's changing business model?
Well, there's three. Well, I should say there's two. Right, there's two principal revenue streams, and one is that we're at this unique intersection, right, where the intersection between media and entertainment, good corporate citizen companies, and socially conscious consumers, right, and this idea of bottom-up social change. And so our primary model is to develop what we call change agent programs for companies that really want to personify their values, right, which is, again, very, very different than cause marketing campaigns where corporations align with nonprofits and institutions, right? What we're doing is we are almost like Nike, like an athletic brand would associate with athletes. we are enabling companies to associate with change agents, right, which become their sort of rock stars for their CSR values, okay? And so that takes...
And that's
that,
almost like a brokering...
It is, and it's...
Okay.
It's really interesting because we create these custom programs. So in certain respects, we're an agency with a platform, right? We started as a platform, but when we got in, we realized that, at least in the case of Timberland, they also valued our ability to develop a end-to-end social media campaign that took the stories of change agents that were aligned with the Earthkeepers brand, which is Timberland's environmentally sustainable sort of flagship brand, and enabled created that program across all kinds of social networks where change becomes a hub, but it's a hub and a spoke, right? There's multiple ways to engage as our story content gets propagated across the internet. And so our primary revenue stream is developing these programs on behalf of good corporate citizen companies and doing the day-to-day social media sort of propagation of this content and obviously all of the sort of the results oriented the results they're looking for in the context of connecting a mass market of consumers against change agents that they are getting behind as a company, right? Our second revenue stream is that some of the changes on our site have really extraordinary stories that that have standalone intellectual property value. And so we have changes on our platform that grant us exclusive options to taking their stories and developing them across traditional media. And so we have, for example, a change agent right now that we have published a book on his behalf. He's a change agent around the topic of genocide. He's done something really very amazing. And we have a motion picture in development, and we have a documentary in development about him.
Can you share what his story is or who he is?
Sure. His name is Chris Nicola. He is a correction officer in Queens, New York, and he's a weekend caver. And he, about 15 years ago, was caving in the Ukraine. He was 2 miles underground, and he came across a 1940s settlement in a cave, and he saw makeshift beds and clothing and a makeshift kitchen with ventilation drilled through the ceiling of this cave, and it ended up that it was 38 Jews that were living underground, escaping the Nazis as they were pushing across Eastern Europe, and it was the longest subterranean human survival story ever. And Chris has committed his life to telling the story of genocide through the eyes of this family. He travels around the country, and he is sharing the story and connecting it as it relates to what's happening in Darfur and other things. We ended up, working with him on his story. We identified the survivors, and we got their story rights, and we published a book. The book is called The Secret of Priest Grotto. The cave is called Priest Grotto, and we've got a number of other deals in the works.
Fascinating. Wow. It's really interesting to talk with you, Darren, because you look at change at the website, and there's only so much information I'm getting for that, and the story that you're telling is deeper and richer, and I know that part of that is the platform connected to the agency, connected to these other endeavors that are assisting the whole mission of getting these stories and these missions out, but it's really interesting to hear these other elements of it. I want to finally get into the Timberland partnership, which was the Earthkeeper Heroes on Change. And tell us about that and how you bought this partnership. As you mentioned, that was a test to credibility and a thing that it helped establish you both in name and in revenue.
you know, in 2008, when we looked at companies that were really walking the talk, Timberland surfaced for us as really the ideal company to work for a number of reasons. One is that Jeff Schwartz, who's the CEO of Timberland, is a real pioneer in understanding the intersection between business and corporate responsibility. And he gets it, right? And he sees those as reinforcing objectives. And so number two is it's a great brand that reaches younger consumers and relevant to younger consumers. And obviously their focus on the environment, you know, and sort of the whole green movement that was happening at the time that we still happening, but obviously it was much hotter, I think, when we started this relationship. For those reasons, we targeted Timberland as our ideal sort of first company to partner with. And in fact, they were the first company we ever reached out to. And so it wasn't like we were on the road pitching changes and, you know, talked to 100 companies and Timberland agreed. It was literally, I wrote an email to Jeff cold, and he passed it on. He was interested in what we were trying to do. He passed it on to his CSR group, and the next thing you knew, we were meeting with the marketing team, right?
How did you pitch it to him? I love it because he's one of my heroes. I was about to say a corporate hero, but he's just one of my heroes in business for the reasons you mentioned, and the fact that you can identify them as your ideal company, send a cold email to the CEO of a very well-known company, and get a response. I'm curious about the angles that you pitched.
I told Jeff, I mean, he you know, Timberland's based in New Hampshire, and I'm in southern New Hampshire, too. We're both right outside of Boston. And so I told Jeff that I told him what he was trying to do. I told him I was a big believer in what he's doing and social entrepreneurship because, of course, he was also one of the City Year pioneers. And I told him, honestly, I said to him that he's big into volunteering, and I also like to volunteer. And I just told him that I would do any volunteering project that he could conceive of in the state of New Hampshire if it gave me an opportunity to spend some quality time with him. He could pick the project. And he never picked the project. He just, I think he saw how genuine my outreach was, and he just passed along my message to their head of CSR, and that's where the relationship, you know, took root.
I love that. That's very smart. Yeah.
I mean, Jeff is such an accessible, genuine, real person. He's a big believer in taking chances. He's just smart and he's nice. So
he is.
Anyway, I really like him. I don't see him anymore because we our relationship the partnership came to an end in 2009. But you know, I still follow him on Twitter and we retweet each other's stuff. So anyway.
So. Did you pitch it to him as at least what it evolved to? I don't know if that's what it started out from, but kind of a social meeting that you could manage and extend across different networks?
It was much simpler than that. I said to him that we had change agents that were beginning to tell their stories on our site that really they were sort of iconic. You know, they were sort of personalities that iconically represented what Timberland believes in, and that there was an opportunity for Timberland to really become a vehicle for putting these individuals on the map, much like he got behind City Year, you know, however many years ago that's been. And when we went in, we didn't talk about technology. I mean, we went in and we talked about these people. Right, we talked about Brad Corrigan. I remember talking about Brad Corrigan, who's a change agent on our site, who was with the band Dispatch, who spends a good chunk of the year, you know, living in the landfills outside of Managua, Nicaragua, helping those communities. And in fact, he's now setting up a lacrosse league in the dumps outside of Managua.
Wow.
Okay. So when we talked about these kind of people, you know, I think that, that Jeff got really, well, I didn't meet with Jeff, I met with the CSR team, but I think they got really excited about that kind of association. And then ultimately, yes, we met with Jeff, and he was really taken by what we were trying to do.
Did you have an advisory board together? This is one of the things that is starting to interest me in how people bring in support and bring in expertise to get these enterprises off the ground. So did you and Alex have a team of an informal team of advisors?
We did. I mean, we had Carol Cohn. Mm-hmm. He was our first advisor of Coney. You know, it's one of the largest cause marketing companies.
Did you have a personal relationship with her, or was that, I mean,
no, I just wrote
a great
her.
Person to have as a first advisor.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I said she's a great person to have as a first advisor. I mean, Darren, you've got the magic touch. Did you just write her a cold email as well?
I did.
I love this.
I did. I mean, you know, everybody, with the exception of, you know, a couple, they were all people that we reached out to that we thought would be good for our advisory board. I mean, I have to admit that this has been one of our biggest challenges is how to strategically leverage an advisory board. And I don't think we've done a particularly good job at it. But you know, we also have, you know, so we have a couple advisors that are very, very active, and then we have other advisors that are really quite inactive, and that I think that's a real challenge for a social enterprise.
Well, that's something I'm going to be focusing more on and looking for people to interview about what, you know, how to leverage in it or how to get one together and really what you can expect for them. So I think that there's so much, there's just not a lot of understanding around it, but there's so much potential for it. So it's an issue that I'm going to be looking at. And it's gratifying. I'm sorry it was a challenge, but it's gratifying that there are organizations out there who could use some ideas around it.
Well, I'll just give you an example. I mean, we just very quick anecdote, right? One of our advisory board members is Channing Dawson, okay? And Channing was one of the founders of one of the, I guess, executives on the founding team of Scripps, which is Home and Garden, Food Network, DIY. He's a real social media interactive TV pioneer, right? And he's on our board. He's also made a small investment in ChangeIns, and he's one of those guys that he just deeply believed in what we were doing from the beginning, and he's always coming with really brilliant ideas. And he had this idea that we would create. He believes there's an opportunity to create a reality TV show around the change agents, both those in our community and those that are on our target list. And we've developed a very interesting format that we are now taking out, and I can't tell you what it's called, but it's got a really cool name, and we're in the process of trying to create a change agent TV show.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I think I was just having this conversation. This is quickly off topic, but it speaks to the power of, like, you know, I was saying, you know, I think of myself as a pretty interested person, but I would love to look at the political news through TV, basically, through some type of dramatization of it that is actual or as close to actual event. And so I think that it's a little bit different than what you're saying, but it really speaks to seeing it played out to get that understanding, that connection and the perspective from various people. So that sounds I know that we have a few more minutes, but I just wanted to ask if you could share some of the other, maybe one more challenge that you've faced with ChangeIns and something that you've been particularly proud of or you feel is a triumph.
Sure. I think what we've been really good at is, I'll start with that, and then I'll, you know, the challenges are probably too long to list, right, as any honest social entrepreneur would tell you. But I think one of the things that we've done really well is number one, I think we have a very unique brand and a very unique position in what has become a cluttered marketplace, which I guess is a good thing because a lot of people want to make a difference. But I think the idea of being personality-driven and story-driven and all about change agents and serving change agents and helping them broker relationships with good corporate citizen companies, get their stories out broadly, train them on how to use social media and how to tell their stories and all this kind of stuff, no one's doing. And so I think that is a really powerful proposition. Even the social entrepreneur, you know, forums, if you will, whether that be Social Edge or Echoing Green or whatever, even Ashoka, no one is doing it the way we're doing it. So I think that's really powerful, and I think that the testimony for that being powerful is that we're able to get our stories on Planet Green regularly, get our stories on Tree Hugger regularly. We just secured a guest blogging relationship with Huffington Post, and so I just think the content is so strong because it's so entertaining that it's just not dry. And I think we've done that really well, and I think we're going to continue to do that really well. I think the challenges are there's a lot of challenges. I think technology has been a real challenge for us. We have a Drupal platform. And for two guys that whose background is in biz dev and strategy, to do the day to run a small company and do the day-to-day operations, managing a site is really difficult when our talent would best be used by having a great team enabling us to go out and really execute on the vision and bring the right people together, the right parties together, and so forth. And so I think that's been a real awakener for me because I've worked at big media companies and I was able to really focus on biz dev, which is what I do the best. And I find myself working on everything, right? And I'm just not qualified to do all the sort of operational details of running a site. So I think that's probably been the principal challenge. And, you know, there's been other ones. There's been challenges with our business model. There's been challenges with the tools that we're providing and the best way to sort of package those up, you know, the list goes on and on. But I think that that's the main challenge.
Mm-hmm. Do you see yourself as spokesperson for this movement of social enterprise?
Do I see myself as what?
A spokesperson for the movement of social enterprise in addition to an entrepreneur, be a larger role in this company as proving out its model and showing and you know kind of doing your part to turn the tide and
yes.
In favor of social enterprises?
Yes, most definitely.
Has it been helpful to one of the other things that I've heard from other companies is the power of networks. Some social venture parts, or maybe even MedImpact or alumni organizations. Have you tapped into networks and leveraged networks to help your businesses change in?
Not as much as we should. I mean, there's a number of organizations that have come to us that have a lot of, particularly social entrepreneur organizations, right, that have, they effectively are change agent pipelines for us, right? Because all the people within their organizations are just amazing people with great stories and doing really cool things in really avant-garde ways, right? So what if we had more time, right, and more money, we would develop branded channels on our site for those organizations and do things that are really strategic. Because, again, what we do really well is we help, you know, we are really smart at connecting change agents to resources, helping them tell their stories and helping them use the internet in an ongoing manner to really propagate their interests, right, and get resources behind them. And so I wish I had more time to do that. I think that's a real growth opportunity.
For more interviews about Cause Capitalism, visit causecapitalism.com.